Hey, and welcome to the Disability Podcast, the podcast where we talk about tips, tricks, and everything disability. So let's not waste any time and get right into this episode of the podcast. Welcome back to the Disability Podcast, and this week I have Maureen with me. And as I don't like to explain people's conditions for them, I'm going to jump right in and get Maureen to explain about herself straight away.
My name is Maureen. I live in Arizona, grew up in the big city of Chicago, or suburban Chicago, really, and grew up with a mother and grandfather with hearing loss. And I was diagnosed with actually a hearing loss when I was 10 years old, was not aided. Didn't get hearing aids until I was about 35, and quickly graduated to cochlear implants. I got my first cochlear implant in 2005 and my second one in 2009. And at that time I was working in retail. I was a retail assistant manager. So hearing was very important for my position.
Yeah. So if we start from the emotional side of things, for listeners listening to your hearing loss journey for the first time, what do you remember emotionally from these early stages? What do you remember emotionally from the early stages of your hearing loss?
Well, I would say at the beginning, I really didn't notice that. I didn't realize I was losing my hearing. I was young enough where I didn't know any different. When I got to my mid-30s, we used to have in my hometown, we used to have crickets and grasshoppers and birds that would sing in the backyard, not the one that I have here right now. I used to hear the crickets, and then there was one summer where I shouldn't say one summer, it wasn't like it was a year, but it wasn't until I got my hearing aids that I realized I was missing it. I didn't realize that they were still there. I just assumed that because I wasn't hearing it, that, you know, they just left. Why they just left, I don't know.
But
I would think that. But you kind of go into a little bit of denial. You don't really think that it's you, that you're the problem. It's everyone else around you that's the problem. They're not speaking loud enough, or everyone starts mumbling, and it's like, you know, that's not my problem, that's yours.
Speak up. So was there a moment when you realized that it was, you sort of started to adapt instead of not blaming it on everyone else, but, you know, realizing it, that it was yourself and not everyone else? So when was that moment that you started to adapt?
Yeah, I think, well, it took a while because I'm still really not, in some ways, I'm still learning to let people know when I walk into a room, or if people don't know me, that I have to let them know. You know, that's still something that is hard for me to do, and something that I know that as a, what I call myself, an auditory mentor or life coach, might be easier for some people to understand. What I would like to do is really teach people from my perspective what I've learned. I've learned that, you know, you need to let people know that you have to be upfront with your hearing loss when you can't hear something. And it's, you know, really important because it's really up to me to make that decision to tell people. It's not like you need to make any changes in your behavior, but I can ask for it. So it's very important for people to ask for help, basically.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, don't overreact.
Right.
Or don't overcompensate for me, just I'll let you know if I need assistance.
Right. I mean, when I didn't tell people, and let's say someone asked me a question and I didn't answer, or they called to me from behind, that happened a lot. I found out at work because I would be walking up an aisle and someone would call for me from behind me, and I wouldn't obviously hear them. So, so those people would think that I was like ignoring them, or I was, bitchy or whatever you want to call it, which is not the case. I everyone can be a little bit on that side, but I'm not normally that way. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions of who I am or who I was, I should say, based on how I reacted to things and with people not knowing. So it's really important for people to know, especially when you have a hearing disability. I mean, it's not like you can look at me and see that I'm hearing impaired.
Yeah. So it's, I can see that. It's otherwise, people get the wrong end of the stick and then they think you're just being rude when you're just trying to,
right.
Trying to, when you actually don't hear them at all. So it's,
And here at that time I was working in retail. I mean, it's not my job to be rude to my customers. If I want them to spend money in my store, I want to be as nice as I can to them. So, I mean, it was like the exact opposite feeling, that I wanted my customers to have. And that goes with, the people that I met in my personal life as well. I mean, if you want to have interaction, social interactions and stuff like that, and keep that connection, you need to be upfront about what your needs are.
So when you're meeting someone new, let's say you're at a social party or something, is there anything that you do? Let's say that someone you've never met them before in your life. To someone who's going through this right now, how would you suggest they overcome, or any tips and tricks that they could use to help navigate those situations?
Well, so you mean like in social situations? So if you're if you're going to someone's house, you might let them know that you are hearing impaired and you need to see people, see people's faces when they're talking. So like if you're sitting at a big table, round tables are best because you can see everybody. When it's a long table, it's kind of harder. So you might let them know that that even the lighting in the room that you might be in, explain to them that you don't want to necessarily have low lights. So it makes it easier for you. Sitting not near where the kitchen is or where people are coming in and out, so that there's a lot of background noise. You want to be someone that is hearing impaired would want to be, not close to that background noise. And then just being upfront again and telling people, I'm sorry, if I need to, let them know that I need to be looking at you to understand what you're saying. So if I would like to have a conversation with you, but you have to make sure you get my attention before you start speaking to me.
Yeah. So it's just basically making everyone have a base level of awareness,
right?
For everyone. Yeah.
Right.
So how did the hearing loss affect your sense of identity? Because you said over a year or so, you didn't realize. So did your personality change? Did your identity change, or how did you approach situations?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know if necessarily my personality changed. I've always been a relatively quiet person anyways. I think I became someone who, even though I loved being around people, didn't necessarily go out a lot with, I did a lot of things by myself, especially after I had a group of friends, that knew that I would go out with before I moved out to Arizona. And then when I moved to Arizona, I kind of lost that little comfort zone. So I spent a lot of my first years in Arizona, not with a heck of a lot of friends, because I was working a lot. I had parents here. So if I was off, I would go see them. I'd go with to a movie with them. I'd spend time with them. It was much easier to be with them than it would be to figure out how to be in a social situation out here. And since both of their passings, I found my tribe. So I can, yeah, go out more. I have people in my life that understand my hearing loss and try to adapt as best as they can for me, which is great. So things have changed a little. Things have changed.
For the better, I assume.
Yes.
I've heard, I mean, this has happened to me because I have hemiplegia. Some friends try and overcompensate when they try and help you at the beginning, because when they realize when to do things, when not to do things with friends, in my own experience, sometimes they overcompensate when they're trying to help you or make your life better in situations. You know, you're going all out to a pub or a restaurant and they're trying to overcompensate. How have you explained to them the sort of line in the sand that is, you know, there, but you don't really want to explicitly say it? They eventually get it, but how do you navigate them to the correct situation?
Well, I mean, an interesting thing happened a couple times. I was for Thanksgiving, took a cruise with my brothers, and even my brother would say to somebody, you know, something about, you know, well, my sister's hearing impaired. And I tried to take him aside after the fact. I wasn't going to like say something in front of other people, but, you know, I let them, both my brothers know, it's, you know, it's my responsibility to let people know, if I think there's a need for that. It's nice. I, you know, first of all, said thank you for doing that, but it's also, yeah. And it's also my responsibility. It's not, you don't have the responsibility for doing that. So, just, you know, letting people know that, when they do overcompensate, how they can, I don't know. I can't find the word for it right now. It's too early in the morning for me. I'm sorry, but
I think I understand what you mean. Yeah,
yeah.
It's correcting them after the event. You know, slowly over the weeks that you know someone.
Right. I mean,
tell them, okay, this is
right. I mean, you don't want
to
blow
how
up.
I like to do things.
You don't want to blow up at them in the moment and say, "Yo, don't do that. I can't. You don't need to do that. Don't do that to me. You know, why are you embarrassing me and stuff like that?" You don't want to do that. But if it is embarrassing to you for someone to say that, but to do it later or let them know at some point that, you know, you don't have to do that for me. Because you want to be nice to your friend or your relative or whatever that's trying, they're trying to be helpful.
Yeah, that's what I
find so interesting. You have to remember that they are trying to be helpful to you. So, and sometimes it's more than you need. So you have to let them know, and you have to teach people what you need.
Slowly, slowly let them find the life. It takes a while, but eventually they get it. And when they do, the first time that they do get it, in my experience, is such a weight off the shoulders, because right. Then you realize, I don't need to say anything anymore.
To work so hard.
And yeah, I don't have to work so hard anymore. So what led you to become an auditory mentor and life coach from your experiences?
I just got to the point where... I left my retail job and I started working from home.
Yeah.
And I was in a job where I was actually on the phones all day. I took incoming calls and stuff like that. And not a lot of people that I know in my hearing loss community are able to do that. So I'm very, first of all, I want to say I'm very lucky. So having that experience, and then, I joined also a business mastermind. Cause I knew there was something more for me. I didn't know what it was. In fact, when my business mentor said something about doing something in hearing loss, I first rejected that because I lived my life in hearing loss. I don't want to spend my career doing some, you know, talking about hearing loss all the time. But yet came to realize that, you know, that's what I know and that's where I can best help people. So, I mean, there was a slow realization that this is what I was meant to be, meant to do. I'm meant to help people in some way, with people with hearing loss, some way to live their life
better. Some way. Help people and not, yeah. I mean, that's, I gradually realized the same thing that I was, you know, I have my disabilities. I might as well use them for something that I can benefit other people with, because otherwise, why not? I have, you know, a certain vision, certain aspect on certain things that I can easily navigate. Let me tell everyone and hopefully it helps someone down the line. Who knows? But at least I've done something.
Right. And I've kind of gone to the path where if I can help just one person, then that's all I need to do. You know, I want to help more, but if there's one person out there that I can help, then if someone out there listening to this right now, if I can help them, then that's all that I need.
That's where it starts. It starts from one person, but then you realize that one person is actually thousands of people eventually. Right. So, and that's honestly why I like podcasts so much, because yes, it's a one-time recording, but then you can point to it for years and it's still there and it's not going anywhere. So it's a point of, you know, I can help a lot of people in the future.
Right.
And they don't even know yet.
Like someone could be looking for a podcast about hearing loss or disability, and they'll come to this episode 5 years from now.
5 years from now.
We'll receive some benefit from what we're discussing today.
Exactly. So what are the biggest shifts people experience through your work? What have you seen is the most beneficial things that people have experienced from you helping them?
I would say more self-confidence. I'm hoping I will give people more self-confidence, the ability to go out and advocate for themselves, the ability to find their own tribe and people that they can rely on to help them along their, if they ask them, along their path, disability path, or even their life path, not even disability. I mean, finding your tribe, connection, advocating for yourself. I think those are really the top three important things that I'm hoping that I can teach people.
So you mentioned advocacy. What does healthy self-advocacy look like?
Self-advocacy. I don't have my headphones anymore from work. I do have some. So self-advocacy means when you're having trouble on the phone with the headphones that they give you to use at work, being able to go and say, this is what I need. This is what will help me do my job better. So like, these are ones that I use that I have after the fact that, cause I had, when I left my job, I had to send the ones that I had back. So I got new ones. So, requesting something that you need. These are Bluetooth enabled noise cancellation headphones. If you see like this, it covers my whole ear, which includes the back of my ear where my microphones are for my cochlear implant. So, and I was able to hear much better with those. Things were much clearer. So that's what, and I was able to get them. I mean, it took a little bit of time. It took about 2 months for everything to go through. But that's what self-advocacy means, you know, to me, and letting people know that, you know, if you're having an issue at work, or if you're having having some sort of issue, whether it's work or in your personal life, that you need to ask and receive.
Ask for what you need. Yeah.
Yeah.
How is the bureaucracy in America? Because it's quite, I'm going to say interesting in England, because some of it is really easy. Some of it is unnecessarily bureaucratic. But I've always wanted to know, what is it like in America to try and get the things that you need?
Well, so sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. With the company I just left, it was basically filling out a form, filling out the correct form, because the reason I had trouble is I filled out the wrong one first. and didn't get what to the department that I needed to get to. So after about a month, I found out that I made a mistake and then found out which form I needed. Filling out that form, it usually means also you have to show medical necessity, which means they will also contact your doctor or in my case, my audiologist to see what my needs were. And then, you know, then going through and finding what is an approved piece of equipment for your specific company. So I because I worked for a pharmacy, I had to make sure that there was, you know, I could get headphones that didn't violate our HIPAA laws, our privacy laws and stuff like that. So, depending on your company, it could be really easy or really hard. It's like,
so, okay. So yeah, for us in the UK, it has nothing to do with the company. Funnily enough, it's just you request what you need and they have to give it to you.
And you have to go through the proper channels.
You get an assessment from the government. The government then gives the company some money to purchase what you need.
Right.
But yeah, depending on the company, big or small, it takes time, forms. It's the forms. I hate the forms. There's too many forms.
Right. It wasn't too bad, but I mean, the other thing I have to tell people is that you have to stay on it. You know, you know, that you're not the only one that they're investigating and working on. So in order to get something, you have to, like, I would call, if I hadn't heard anything, I would call, like, you know, weekly, say, what's the update? I wouldn't call every day, but.
Yeah, you have to figure out the perfect time gap to chase up things.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to really want to do it, to get it. So making sure that.
Yeah, I think they do it on purpose to really make sure that you do need the stuff that you're looking for. Because if they made it too easy, then everyone would do it. So I think there's a bit of, I don't know, maybe it's my pessimism talking, but I think there's a bit of, you know, deterrent inbuilt in the system to, you know, if you actually need it, you will go through these steps. But that's...
It's
that's
not
just,
easy.
That's just what I think. It's not easy. So if we're closing that, because we're almost at the end here, what is one practical step that someone can take this week to make their life with hearing loss easier, or, you know, go down one route to investigate something that they might be able to, you know, benefit from?
Well, they can contact me first of all, and we could go over, you know, we could find out what they need. We can discuss what they need, and, you know, I can help with that. I also, I do have a book that I self-published in June, called, My Voice Beyond Hearing Loss. How I discovered confidence, freedom, and inner peace. And it does go into, I discuss my story, and I also discuss in a couple chapters the things that I came to realize that I didn't, you know, during that process of writing and through the process of being a child of a grandparent and mother who had hearing loss, and then my own hearing loss story, some of the things that I came to realize. So, I mean, that's in there. So that will be helpful as well. And as I said, getting in touch with me, I can give you my email address if people want to contact me, which is maureen@heretohearyou.com. And that's maureen at HEAR, the number 2, HEAR, the letter U.com. So that's the way to get in touch with me.
I'll put it all in the show notes, so you can just, they can find it. They'll be able to click it and it'll go straight. So yeah.
Okay, perfect.
They won't need to type anything out and get their own address. So that should be fine. Yeah.
And then the book is on Amazon.com. So as you can find, and Amazon is worldwide. So as far as I know.
Amazon is basically worldwide. Okay. Well, thank you, Maureen, for being on the podcast. If there's anything else just before we leave, you're free to talk about anything. Otherwise, thank you for being on the Disability Podcast.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time, and it was fun.
Thank you for listening to the Disability Podcast. Anything that you heard during the show will be linked in the show notes, including where to get more information about our guest, our Lunar Life newsletter, or anything else that you may find interesting. If you want to know anything more, leave us a comment. Please follow our Instagram, message us on LinkedIn, all of which also will be in the show notes. We hope to see you again next week. Thank you for listening.